Heavenly Father God, thank you so much for this opportunity to come together and to have what we believe is a very important conversation. Be in the midst and lead and guide us into all truth. It's in Jesus' name I pray this. Amen. Hello, good morning, and welcome to another episode of What's the Message? I am your host, Claudia Allen, and I am here with my co-host, the editor-in-chief, the lady that makes all things well, Carmela Monk Crawford. You know, I try to switch it up with her every week, and so we are so excited to just be back with you. This is a very important conversation for both Carmela and myself, and we felt it so critical that we have today's guest on to really help us understand and to provide you guys with the resources and enlightenment that you need to make sense of this situation as well. So today we are so excited to have Erica Jones. Erica is the Assistant Director of Women's Ministries for the North American Division of Seventh-day Adventists, but she also serves and will be speaking to us in this particular role that she serves in as the coordinator director for the End It Now campaign. She received her undergraduate degree in English from Southern Adventist University, after which she accepted a position in the General Conference Youth Department as an editorial assistant, where she managed the 1 Year in Mission initiative. Her primary ministry is working with teen girls and developing resources that address the real issues that they face. She also dedicates time to the continuing emphasis of women's ministries on abuse prevention and education. One of Erica's greatest desires is to empower young women to have the tools to make wise choices in their relationships, recognizing that the choices they will make will impact them for their entire lives. And I know as well that Erica has done a multitude of work, not just around education, but true advocacy for women, particularly those who have experienced physical and sexual abuse. And that's kind of what we really want to get into today. We recognize that this is Domestic Abuse Awareness Month, and we are aware that this is something that we oftentimes don't give light to. We don't talk about it. We don't address it. And that's not okay. And so today we want to get into it with Erica. We're so grateful that she's here with us today. Carmela, man, what are you feeling with this? You know, this is such a heavy topic, but, you know, as you and I have discussed on multiple occasions, it's something that we're both very much so passionate about.
Oh, you're right, Claudia. And first of all, good morning to you. Excellent introduction as always. Claudia, you're par excellent, and you know that. And this is our honor to have Erica Jones on, my colleague from the North American Division of Seventh-day Adventists today. It is, you know, what is sad about it is this is so heavy and so prevalent. In my background, working formerly as a child advocate, it was always my great interest to protect children, to give the people around them the tools that they need to protect children, to define what the space looks like to be safe. Not everybody mm-hmm. grows up in a safe environment and can define what that even looks like or feels like that. And I've always felt blessed because mm-hmm. that has not been my experience, but my passion has been there. I've also had the opportunity to, as you have said, defend people in court who were, you know, accused of soliciting and loitering for prostitution. And I regularly covered those stories as well. And I have a great interest in creating a society that is free from violence. And that's exactly what Erica Jones and your organization with End It Now does, is just take a look at violence wherever it is. Sexual violence, domestic violence, child abuse, child sex abuse, not just here, but everywhere. And so one thing that I thought was interesting, Eric, and I'd like to ask you about it. I know the Centers for Disease Control had a very interesting study a few years ago that I believe it's not even that that old. 2018 says one third of women and one quarter of men experience sexual abuse sometime during their lifetime. That was shocking to me. Erica, talk to us about the scale of sexual violence, and then if you want to branch out and talk to some of these other areas in which violence creeps into the life, I would love to hear about that as well.
Yeah, you know, those numbers are staggering, but we don't hear them often enough. And people are usually shocked to know how many women are killed every year by a partner. Being killed by someone you know is actually much more likely to happen than being killed by somebody that you don't know, a stranger. And this is something that we as a faith community should not be coming from behind on, right? We should be out in front of it, calling it out as we see it and leading the way in terms of our culture and our society and saying we're not going to stand for it. But for some reason, faith communities are much more likely to say, we don't want to touch that. That's a society issue. It's mainstream. It doesn't happen here. Our people don't do that. But back in 2014, Renee Drum, who's a social worker and researcher, held a study out on the West Coast in Seventh-day Adventist homes. And there were over 1,400 responses. Our numbers were as bad, in some areas worse, than the rest of society. Mm-hmm. So the people that are sitting in the pews in church every weekend, our numbers in terms of domestic violence and sexual abuse are right in line with the rest of society. Mm-hmm. So I can't, you know, when somebody says it doesn't happen here, we don't need to talk about it, I can show them it absolutely does. Absolutely does.
Wow. I mean, I definitely agree with you. I'm going to go right to you, Carmela. Just wanted to share a story. You know, my mother's older sister was actually killed by an intimate partner when she was in her 30s and, you know, stabbed to death. And so I think that just like you're saying, it happens. And we just like to, it's I think it's maybe so traumatizing and so difficult that we just try to forget it or don't deal with it. And it's really unfortunate. So, you know, I was glad that you really brought that up. I just wanted to say like, yeah, hey, like, even if you are someone in your family and you maybe haven't experienced that violence, I can guarantee you probably know somebody who has experienced that violence. And so it's not a distant conversation that we are having. We are having a conversation that is very real. Things have happened in people's families that we know of. Things have happened to people that we know. And so that's just the reality of it. Carmela?
Right. Well, and I guess that's why, I believe that, you know, this particular church, Adventist, decided to do something about it. Can you tell us a little bit about the origin of the office with End It Now and this thrust to sort of articulate the problems of violence both here and around the world?
Sure. So, I mean, End It Now as a campaign has been around since back in the early 2000s, I believe it was initiated by ADRA. So that's the Adventist Development Relief Agency. And they partnered with the General Conference Women's Ministries Department in order to start building an awareness campaign of abuse that's happening around the world. And so they started with a petition. They were gathering signatures from all over the world. Unfortunately, over time, you know, as things happen, there's transitions in leadership and other areas, and it kind of fizzled out a little bit. But North American Division picked the baton up and said, you know, we're gonna keep doing this here. So it was a women's ministries initiative for a while, but several years ago, the division realized this is not a women's issue. This is a human issue. And so now it is a very, very much a multi-departmental ministry campaign. And we really contextualized in it now for, obviously, for the US, Canada, Bermuda, and Guam. And so we're really, we're building awareness through education to inspire prevention and encourage intervention. That's really our mission, is to say it's gone on long enough. It's time to end it, and to say to our church members, our pastors, our principals of our schools, our administrators, who are in a position of leadership, authority, and responsibility, to be able to call this out, to be willing to make the right phone calls, to refer, right? Not necessarily to investigate. That's not their role. And so we're trying to build that awareness. And I think we've done that over the last several years, and to put tools into the hands of those people so that on that local level, they can start making change, real lasting change.
Well, talk to us about what it means. You know, if you put, you know, talk about contextualize, you know, let's put ourselves in the shoes of people who are experiencing violence in their home. What are some of the things, you know, you talk about putting tools in people's hands, and, you know, to me, I can't imagine what are the effective preventative tools that are there. Well,
so an interesting statistic that I found out about two years ago, maybe 69%, and this is not an Adventist statistic, 69% of abuse victims turn to who first, do you think? Who in their life and community do you think they would go to first when they're ready to tell somebody what's happening to them?
It's not nope. It's going to be their pastor.
Pastor.
It's their pastor. When we discovered that, almost 70% of victims go to their pastor first. So there's that statistic. And then we find out that the majority of pastors have had no education on how to help a victim. Even if they have had the education, they're not willing to use it. They don't know what resources are available to them. We really zoned in and said, our mission then is to educate that first line of defense. That's where we're gonna start. And that's what we've spent the last 3 years doing with the Summit on Abuse, is anybody can watch, it's free. We encourage people at schools, camps, administrators, they're all encouraged to watch. But I would tell you, our target audience is pastors. Because we discovered that. So we make them aware by, number one, providing the summit, which is now every year. We want to keep this in front of them every single year. Our resources are free. And, you know, we can discuss that a little later if you'd like, but I'd like to share a couple of those with your audience here. But we feel like if we can encourage awareness and prevention at that level, we aren't set up to be, you know, we're not a shelter, we're not a hotline, we're not a crisis intervention center. We're not set up to do that. What we are set up to do is to intervene by educating the people that are in those positions, that are close to the victims.
What do the people then do? So say you do get involved, what are you supposed to do, right? So here I am, I see somebody at my church, you know, I'm a pastor or whatever, I see something happen, and maybe we should start there. I guess what you're saying by citing that statistic is that, no, you didn't have to detect anything. People come out and tell you that this is what's happening in my life.
Or if you do, you know, we've all heard the phrase, if you see something, say something. We need to err on the side of, this feels weird. It something strange on here, right? Do you know, you can make an anonymous call. There's anonymous tip lines that you can call and say, you don't have to give your name. You don't have to give your information. When it's child abuse, you have to. And in a church situation, as a pastor, as a volunteer, you are mandated by your state to make that call. And let me put it this way. If wrong, no harm, no foul, right? They're going to check it out. They're going to investigate. No harm, no foul. if you're right,
yeah,
and it's happening and you don't do it, you have just knowingly allowed that person's life to continue in, I'm sorry, in a hellish way, mm-hmm. right? That child can't usually speak for himself or herself. They are probably waiting and praying and hoping that somebody notices that something's off. Mm-hmm. Willing to speak up. And each of us needs to be willing to speak up. Now, I'd like to show one of our most practical tools, Carmela, to answer your question in a very practical way, is a decision tree.
Okay.
And I'd like to show that to your audience here, because this is something that we send out for free, but it's also downloadable as a PDF on our website, enditnownorthamerica.org. This should be front and center in our churches. It needs to be on your bulletin boards. It needs to be in your bathrooms. Your pastor needs to have a copy of it. Mm-hmm. There's no excuse at this point for not understanding how to help a victim when they disclose to you or you notice something and you have a conversation. This decision tree walks them through that in terms of if this, then, right? And notice nowhere it doesn't talk about investigation. It doesn't talk about, well, make sure that she's telling the truth. Nope. It talks about listening, respecting, and knowing how to refer her. That's what we expect from our pastors, our administrators, our teachers, that you have this information in front of you so that you don't do more harm than good. Because what I hear over and over and over is, I got asked questions about it. I wasn't believed. And here's the thing, in faith communities, when I'm just going to use the term she, it certainly happens to men, but for ease of conversation, I typically talk about a victim as female. When she discloses that, and let's say she discloses to a pastor, and he says, you know, I just have a really hard time believing that. I know him. I can't imagine him doing that. Look, guys, predators don't look like predators. They look really charming, nice people. And it is not our job to investigate. It's our job to listen and respect and refer her to safety. That's our job.
Excellent.
You
talk about this movie, everything that you're saying, it goes across the board, whether you're talking about child abuse, domestic violence, not just between married people, but, you know, dating violence, all that.
Yes.
It's the same decision tree. You see something, you say mm-hmm. something. Where are you when it comes to the terminology? Are people who are subject to violence survivors or victims?
We typically use both. I'll admit that. With End It Now, with our campaign, we use those terms. Typically, we use the term victim when it's ongoing. Mm-hmm. We use the term survivor. I mean, they all are survivors in their own right, but typically that we use that terminology when they're finding their way out of it, or they have found their way out of it. There's kind of these different steps, but they're all survivors in their own right, whether it's still going on or it's ceased, or they've gotten help or they haven't been ready to take that step. And, that's an important part of this because, again, especially in our context, a lot of people say, why doesn't she just leave? Why doesn't she just walk away? And it's just not that simple. And again, that's part of the education arm of this is helping people be aware of what her everyday life is like. Somebody gave the example of they had a woman sitting in a chair, and with every slap or psychological abuse, financial abuse, with everything he was doing, the person threw a heavy blanket on top of her. So every word, every physical act, every bit of control were these heavy blankets going on top of this woman. And then the speaker looks at her, she's covered in blankets, and says, leave, get up and leave.
Mercy.
And we also know from research that typically victims, they will go back an average of 8 to 10 times before they make the actual exit, the long-term exit, because of the cycle of abuse that happens, so we can't be so quick to judge and say, I tried to help you and you went back.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
You know, I'm really glad that you said that, because as you were talking, you know, one thing that came to my mind is I'm trying to figure out, why is it that we do that? Why do we say, why don't you just leave? Or, you know, when we hear stories, you know, our first thought is to say, that doesn't sound like abuse. That sounds consensual. Like she wanted to be in this relationship with him. Or what causes us to, as you say, not believe victims?
Well, one, it's very uncomfortable. It's very uncomfortable to be pulled into that world, especially if you have no relatability. But, you know, we talked in the beginning, all of us, if we open our eyes, know somebody. We all know somebody that's facing this, but it's very uncomfortable in a faith community environment. It feels yucky, right? It feels icky to get ourselves involved with it. And if we ask questions enough, it kind of pushes it off us and puts it back on them, because we really don't know what to do. And that's what Indy Now is trying to do, is say, we're going to take away the excuses. There's no more excuses for not knowing what to do. Right? We're giving you the tool to be able to help, right? And that's what we're called to do. You know, the really sad part is when a woman is questioned by, you know, a fellow Christian, brother or sister or pastor, that person has been in a position of being Jesus' hands and feet, of being Jesus to that person. And when we ask questions, when we're judgmental or we walk away, we've just put this huge wedge in between them and God. God absolutely sobs when his children act that way to another one of his children and ignore or make excuses or say, you know, I just have a hard time believing that.
Go ahead, Corey.
I'm wondering with that in mind, and as you stated earlier, anywhere from 60 to 70% of victims of abuse going to their pastor first. What then happens when your pastor becomes your perpetrator? How then do I deal with, process what's going on, particularly maybe if he didn't start the abuse initially, but was very helpful in some way, actually got me away from, maybe he got me away from my abuser only to then become my abuser. Right. How does that even happen?
It happens more often than we'd like to know. To give you some indication of this, we hosted the summit last year at Andrews University at the seminary. So we had about 150 seminarians. These are people preparing to be shepherds of a flock, right? Yeah. We through the ACE study with them. So that's adverse childhood experiences, right? You would be floored by the numbers. So they're texting in their answers, right? Yes or no, yes or no. And the numbers are going up on the screen. Have you been sexually abused? Have you been sexually abusive? Was someone in your family incarcerated when you were a child? The numbers were staggering. Have you used pornography in the last month? It was something like 70%. Have you been in sexual relationships with someone who was not your partner? Something like 45%. I mean, and the reason we did that was not to say, hey, look at you guys. You shouldn't be pastors. It was to say, if that exists in this room, there's 150 of you here that are all studying to become pastors. If that exists in this room, what do you think is going to exist in your pews?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Does it necessarily matter that they've experienced these things, that they're automatically going to repeat that behavior? Not necessarily, but it starts with awareness. And we inspired that awareness that day by saying, you can't lie about this. These are your answers. Yeah. This is what exists in this room. Secondly, to have them prepared so that when that does happen, they're willing to talk about it. But Claudia, anytime someone in a position of spiritual authority and leadership, a pastor, enters into a sexual relationship of any kind, consensual or not consensual, it is spiritual abuse. Mm-hmm. End of story.
Wow.
Spiritual. Wow. A pastor has a higher calling, right? He's been put in that position. When he enters into any kind of relationship, either allowing it to go on or he's having consensual sex with a woman who is not his wife, he has automatically committed spiritual abuse against that person as a person who's been preaching and been in a position of authority to teach the gospel, and then at the same time is entering into this kind of relationship with someone.
Talk to us about that. I would love for you just to stay right there and unpack the idea of spiritual abuse. Because what you're not just saying this is, you know, a physical interaction. This is not just the sex. This is something that permeates the spirit. And on the back end of that, what is going to be the long range prognosis for a person who experienced this when you talk about post-traumatic syndrome, when you talk about their productivity? I would really love for you to stay right there. What do you mean by spiritual abuse and what is its impact?
So spiritual abuse is physical, psychological, emotional. It can take place by a pastor, an elder, a deacon, anybody who's in that church structure, right? Who's been put in that position that then inflicts, like I said, psychological trauma, emotional trauma. It can be even in the definition, creating a toxic culture. And we've seen this, right? We've seen this in churches, creating a toxic environment for the congregant. That's spiritual abuse. And the problem again is, you know, when you are looking at somebody as a spiritual leader, and then that same person inflicts trauma, you've now associated, right, God, because this is a man of the you've now associated God with this person. It's much easier to believe that God has allowed this to happen to you, right? It's much easier to believe, well, if he's up there preaching and he's you know, my pastor and he's studied homiletics and knew he's got a doctorate in New Testament and he wants me. Is this God's will? I've heard it. Spiritual abuse. You are at a whole nother level. And so here's the thing. When this is perpetrated by a member of the church who is, you are an employee, right? In Seventh-day Adventist context, you are an employee of your local conference, right? It needs to be reported. And we have, you know, on the End It Now website, we have a way to do that. It's called the silent whistle. So if you want to stay anonymous and to be confidential, you can fill out that form and it goes to the appropriate people. And you don't have, you know, there's a process that takes place. But a lot of people aren't willing to do it because he's the pastor, he's the deacon, he's the choir director. You know, it's hard to believe it, number one. And when it's happening to you, you feel like, and it's one of those people in a position of power, you think anybody's going to believe you or be willing to back you up?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It rarely happens. And sadly, we've seen a lot of these perpetrators, maybe it gets reported, but we feel like because they're our brother and sister, and you know they've gone through seminary and all these things, well, we can't just fire them. That wouldn't be the Christian thing to do. We can't just get rid of them. We'll move them.
You're killing me.
Yeah, we'll just move them somewhere else. And what I say is, the first time that employee, that pastor, that youth director perpetrates abuse, that's on him. The second time after we've moved him and he does it to another person, that's on us.
Okay.
You know, wow.
The spiritual abuse, and this is something, and I kind of want to steer the conversation back to the person who's going to be a survivor of this, because in my experience in the work that I used to do, I had cases where mothers would, for lack of a better word, deliver their children to their boyfriend or would turn the other way because that relationship was so important to them, which is a heinous, heinous position to be in. But there's a mindset that comes that is entangled with the things around it. And a moment ago, we talked about what it is like, you know, why a person doesn't leave, why a person feels trapped. One of the statistics that I saw talks about the fact that people are, you know, who experience this intimate partner violence, but I expect it goes in other areas of violence. People have a dependency, or they're food insecure, they're economically insecure. Obviously, there may have been another area of social or spiritual vulnerability that is there. What can we do as a church to perhaps maybe cover some of those pitfalls? You know what I'm saying?
Well, we need to be, our church is, you know, somebody said to me a few months ago, they said, if somebody could go and pick up your church, your local church, pick it up and just remove it automatically, would the community around you notice? Hmm. Right? If our churches are not meeting the felt needs of the people in their communities, whether it's having a food pantry, having resources available to help them refer if they need a shelter, if they need daycare for their children, you know, whatever it is, if we're not meeting felt needs, what is the point? Mm-hmm. What is the point? And so we need to be looking at those things. And so my mm-hmm. dream that God has put on my heart is creating, you know, it's easy at this point to get government help services, right? To go and find these government websites and say, okay, what's available to me in my area? And we have that on our website. I think that's important. You need to be able to zip code in and see what's available to you. But how awesome would it be to have an Indit Now directory where you go on and you're seeing faith communities, you're seeing churches, you're seeing schools that have really taken this on, who are advocates and are meeting felt needs, where you can go on and say, okay, maybe it's not 10 minutes away, but within my general vicinity, I'm seeing my faith community, what's available to me, not just government help, right?
So that's
my part, you know, as a goal over the next year or two. And we've got some things rolling that I can't talk about quite yet, but that we're very, very excited about in order to inspire just that, because our local church needs to take up the banner for this and really start assessing what does our community need? What do our own members need? And how do we meet them where they are?
Yes, yes. You know, I was just gonna say, you know, part of me, when I'm here, and I love the fire in your voice, Erica. I love the fire in your face and just, you know, the way you were in this. You are the kind of wing person that every woman would want. No, this is not it. And I'm going to get in the middle between, you know, part of me, and forgive me for injecting any kind of levity into this very serious topic, but you know, part of me wants somebody around in every environment, whether it's, you know, the stereotypical Medea from the movies. I could just, you know, I want her with her chainsaw to tear up the couch and break everything down. Yeah. I wish that we as women, we as brothers and sisters would feel compelled to tear up whatever it is to get our people to safety. Because the other statistic that I saw, this is what kills me. This American Journal of Preventive Medicine, July 2018, says each victim was victimized by an average of 2.5 perpetrators. Okay, so this is not just one person, but then somebody else is gonna come along, because this is what people have grown accustomed to in this bubble of spiritual, physical, sexual abuse and violence. People are used to it, and so it's going to happen again. That's why you say end it now. And so not only are they going to be perpetrated against again, these same people are going to lose the ability to be productive. And so they say, you know, as they do the research, victims lost 741 million productive days, with nearly 5 days lost per victim on average. So now the whole, your whole trajectory in life, the safety and security of your home and children, everything is altered. And so we need somebody to get in there. Erica, help us be like what you, the fire in your voice. Well,
we all need a fighter. That's, you know, we all need somebody to fight for us when we can't fight for ourselves. And you know, the God that I serve is a God of the voiceless. He defends the defenseless. He stands up for the brokenhearted, the hurt, the widowed. And I'm tired of hearing that we just don't know what to do. And you know, the other, I wanted to mention this, in terms of spiritual abuse, the other thing that I hear is pastors being afraid of breaking up a marriage, right? So instead of trying to get her to safety, the priority, it's keeping her marriage together, okay? This is not about doing marriage counseling. You're not a counselor, you're a pastor. It's not about bringing him in and sitting him down, because the best experts in the field, the very best experts in the field will tell you, they can't always spot an abuser. It's not that easy. People are charming, they're manipulative, they're expert liars. So as a pastor, you can't expect that you're gonna be able to see it. You're gonna be able to spot him and call it out. And you also shouldn't be sending her home and telling her that that's her cross to bear. You marry him, divorce is a sin, can't help you. Your number one priority for her should be the safety of her and her children if they're involved, right? So again, that spiritual figure, that spiritual head is so important in the life of that victim in terms of how she sees God, how she sees her own value, how she determines next steps. Part of the problem that cycle repeats itself is because when it happens, especially when it happens in childhood or adolescence, she begins to believe that that's what she deserves. And so it's much easier to slip into that pattern of behavior. I'm not silent about this. And it's, again, it's uncomfortable, and people, I'm not always a popular person when I go to speak, but I have yet to go to one of our academies, one of our boarding schools, where by the time I'm done on that weekend speaking to our high school girls, I don't have a line waiting to talk to me. And out of that line, at least a handful of them have already been sexually molested and or raped. And one or two of them, it's happened on that campus and nobody's done anything. All right. You know, enough is enough. And is it my job? Do I get paid to intervene? No, I'm not an expert. I'm not an investigator, but I got to do something. I can't walk off that campus knowing that that's taking place and not speak to somebody, not take it to the next level, right? These girls, these victims, these survivors, these children need champions. They need fighters. And it's not fun and it's not comfortable. But somebody's got to do it. And if it's not you and it's not me, then who's it going to be? Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to say, well, somebody else will notice. Somebody else will make the call.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would love it. Go ahead, Claudia. Then I'll go
back. One of the sermons I've preached probably the most people have ever asked for, it's a sermon called Eloquent Rage, and it's based on Judges 19.
Yes.
And I preached this at a social justice conference a few years ago. Carmela was there, actually. I wasn't at Message yet at the time. And I'll never forget, Erica, I preached this sermon on a Friday night. There were women at the conference, but it was majority men. Mm-hmm. And you could have heard a pin drop touching on this. When I finished, one of the guys moderating tried to kind of move on to kind of like the next thing to give some announcements. And then I remember two pastors from the audience just yelled out over him, "We're not moving. Like, she's talking about stuff in the room." Mm-hmm. And like, they prayed, they stopped and got into small groups and legitimately just started praying. And the next morning I was in the buffet line. I guess I didn't necessarily look the same way I looked the night before. And a male pastor came up to me and he said, "Are you the woman that preached last night?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Yeah." And he said, "You were talking about me. I had to go to my room, pray, and ask God for forgiveness." He turned around and left.
Mercy, mercy.
I never saw him again for the remainder of the conference. And I just didn't know who he was to even ask anybody. And after having that experience, I just felt that, like what you were saying, like that uncomfortable, mm-hmm. knowing that I was in a room with at least one person, but the spirit felt like there were significantly more. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's just like you're saying, we don't want to feel that feeling of, man, we want to try to eliminate it, mm-hmm. ignore it. But what you're doing, we have got to do is continue to educate, make aware, provide resources and help, but also we gotta preach this stuff from the pulpit.
Amen.
Because Absolutely. People are actually not being convicted of their sin. Because you know what I mean? Like when you are the perpetrator, whether you are an elder, a leader, a pastor, a community, whatever you do for a living or however you spend your time, it is clear that we're actually not convicting people or causing them to repent. And one of the things that I love about that story in Judges that's gonna lead me to, you know, our conversation, this part of our conversation, is the Israelites went to war against the Benjamites.
That's what we're talking about. Yeah.
This woman was mob raped by Benjamites, men of God, children of Israel. This is not Sodom. This is not Gomorrah. This is the church.
Right.
And all the children of Israel came and said, "Y'all are a problem. Mm-hmm. We are going to fight you, push you out, destroy you, because we cannot allow this kind of behavior in our camp." Mm-hmm. And what does it look like for churches to really war against this stuff? What does it look like to really push this kind of stuff out of your church, out of your congregation? You know, we talk about accountability. What does it look like to hold people and systems accountable? What's effective? What's not effective? Where are we wasting our time? And what do we need to be doing right now?
Come on now.
Sorry, a little bit of fire came out.
I love it. Light the fire for everybody.
You know, Claudia, part of the reason that people don't want this preached from the pulpit is because action follows awareness. So if I'm not aware, I can say, "I didn't know," right? But once you know, you're responsible. Yeah. And people want to be responsible. So again, we've taken, I don't know if you know this, but it is on the official calendar for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. The fourth Sabbath in August, every year, fourth Sabbath in August, is supposed to be dedicated to abuse prevention emphasis, okay? And we don't just say that in the calendar and say, you know, do something. On our website, every year is everything you would need to have a day like that. Everything. Wow. We give you the sermon. We give you the PowerPoint. We give you an afternoon seminar. We have videos. We have handouts. There's no excuse not to do this. That's where they need to start. The churches are hearing this and they say, man, I'm convicted. I got to do something. Where do I start? Number one, you can email me at endit@nadadventist.org. You can go to our website. You need to start with an emphasis day. It doesn't have to be the fourth Sabbath in August. It can be whenever you fit it on the calendar, and it's all right there ready and as a packet ready to go for you to kind of launch this in your church and get people to open their eyes and say, man, this is there's no turning back now. We recognize this is happening here. Now what? Put that decision tree in the hands of people. Put together a small task force if you want in your church, people that are dedicated to saying, we're going to keep these resources available in the restrooms. We're going to keep this in front of people. We're going to be responsible for having this special day every year. We're having a watch party for the Summit on Abuse. There's lots of things that people can do to get this going. And we've really tried to make it as easy as possible for them. It's all right there. You know, in terms of creating an environment, those victims are going to feel supported before they've ever told anybody. When they start seeing that and they say, these people care. They're talking about it. There's stuff in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Right? These people care. They recognize that this could happen. So maybe I can tell somebody now, because now they get it. But when we have nothing and we don't talk about it, we don't show it, and we're not willing to put the resources in the bathroom stall, who's going to feel safe going to the pastor, you know? The other thing, and this is available on our website, is volunteer screening. These are not just the employees of your church that matter. We need to care about everybody that's working in an official capacity in that church. Mm-hmm. That goes for Sabbath school leaders, choir directors, camp directors, people that are at, you know, all of those people, vacation Bible school. They have to go through the screening verification process, which is kind of like our version of a background check. Mm-hmm. And I get flack more than I care to admit from people that say, this is invasion of privacy. We need to trust more. And I say, here's the thing. Trust and verify. Mm-hmm. You can do both. Verify, then you can trust, right? If you are uncomfortable getting this done, and you want to work with minors, especially, sorry, it's policy. You can go do something else and you can be a member and you can come to church, but you don't get to work with minors when you're not willing to have a background check done.
Yeah.
Again, creating that environment of safety, creating that awareness, prevention. When we go through the background screening process and we say, hey guys, if you want to serve, this is mandatory.
That's how we prevent. That's how we help restore. You know, I want to do something. I know we got a few minutes left. And as you all are talking, you know, I've had the, I don't know what you would call it, the distinction, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at the system, of also representing people who are perpetrators on the scale. So you go into the courtroom, there's you know, lawyers for both sides. I've stood next to people who committed some and perpetrated some things that, you know, it you know, gives you, you know, the willies up the back of your neck, because it's like, ooh. But I stood next to them, and the reason why I'm bringing that up right now is that there are people that are watching. And Erica, I would love for you to speak to each segment. And I want you to start with those who have perpetrated. What is their next step? I want you to talk to the people who have been on the receiving end as a victim and a survivor. What's their next step? I want you to talk to somebody on the periphery who may or may not be aware of these things. What is their next step today?
Yes. You have perpetrated any kind of abuse against another human being, be it child, be it adult, male, female, whether it's psychological abuse, financial abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse. It needs to end today, and the only way it ends is with you dropping to your knees and asking the Savior, the creator of the world, for mercy, for forgiveness, and for change, true, genuine, authentic change. And action must follow that prayer. It must. It's not automatic. It's not a check mark. It's not just a minor step. It's a huge step. But we know that without genuine repentance, without the genuine request for transformation, more than change, transformation, inner transformation, and taking steps to get counseling, non-negotiable, absolutely non-negotiable. Confession, right? That change is not going to occur. So it's not enough to just apologize to abuse. This is a long journey that you probably, you know, the destination is way out there, but it starts with today, praying that prayer, and today taking action, taking that next step of, I need help. I've been hurt. I've hurt other people.
Yeah.
And it ends today.
Yeah.
To the victim, my heart breaks for you today as it did 3 years ago when God called me into this ministry and I didn't understand why he was calling me to it. I didn't understand. He has given me this heart. And I just want each of you to know you are so incredibly loved and valued and cherished by the God of the universe. You are his daughter. And this is not your fault ever. I don't care what you were wearing, where you were, if you were drinking. I don't care where you were, how you were dressed, who it was. It was not your fault. It was wrong. And it was not God's will. He loves you. He is merciful. And he wants you safe. In all aspects of that word, he wants you safe. And we are here to support you, to walk through that journey with you, and to help get you to safety. And to those who have stood on the sidelines, and I've been one of them, who claimed ignorance, who claimed somebody else would take care of it. It might seem strange, but it's probably nothing. To those who are sitting on the sidelines, it is time to stand up, to be a champion, to be a voice, to be God's arms on this earth wrapped around those who are hurting. And it's going to be uncomfortable and it's going to be hard. It is our responsibility. And again, we are here to serve you, to provide the resources you need. You are not on your own, but it is time to end it now.
Man, that's a great way to close this conversation, Erica. We are so grateful to you for coming and just sharing so much information to both enlighten and inspire us. Is there any way, let the people know rather, how they can continue to get in contact with you, get access to those resources you were talking about, share that again. And also if there are any projects or events that you need to make us aware of.
Sure, thank you so much for giving me that opportunity. I really appreciate it. Our website again is enditnownorthamerica.org. You will find all the resources that I've talked about and more, and they are all free. If you want them in print version, I will mail them to you at absolutely no cost. End It Now Emphasis Day materials are available there. And also registration for this year's Summit on Abuse, which is happening November 13 in English. We are live streaming. It is free for anyone to watch. And even if you can't make it during that live stream, it's going to be available directly after on our Facebook page, which is End It Now NAD. If you have friends, coworkers, colleagues that speak Spanish, November 14th, the following day, same presentations will be made available in Spanish. That's important. And so, yeah, please visit our website, email us. Our contact information can be found there. Watch the summit. I really feel God is calling us to make a difference here. There are just, you know, one out of every 10 people who leave the church, one out of every 10 who walk away, they say they left because of how abuse was handled in their congregation. Let's not make any more excuses.
Man, we are so grateful that Erica Jones from Ended Now, North American Division, Women's Ministries came and spent the morning with us. I know many of you have been encouraged, enlightened. All of you are in the comments, and we're just so grateful that you enjoyed this conversation. So make sure that you check out all of those resources. Make sure that you are registered for the Ended Now Summit on Abuse. You do not want to miss, and you just want to make sure that you get more in-depth information so that this does not just remain a conversation. This doesn't even just remain a moment on a digital platform, but that we need to turn this into tangible action in each of our local and specific areas. So I really want to encourage you to do that. As always, guys, this is a podcast that is hosted and sponsored by Message Magazine. And so if you like this podcast, if you like the kinds of conversations that we're having, then you've got to support Message. So make sure that you go to www.messagemagazine.com. There you can donate. You can purchase a variety of resources and products, including our bi-monthly print magazine, Bible studies, tracks, and so much more. But we also are still receiving donations. So guys, if you want a text to give, you can still text 41444 message mag. Text message mag to 41444 and you can still donate. You can still support us in everything that we are trying to do. As you all know, we are passionate about circulating the magazine in prisons. And so that is already happening. And so we want to continue to minister to those who are incarcerated and their families. And it's with your donations that we're able to continue to do that kind of ministry. We also just want to let you know, hey, guys, I'm trying to grow the platform out here. All right. Yeah. I need you to like and subscribe. All right. You're asking me, Claudia, when's the next podcast? If you liked and subscribed, you'd know when the next podcast was. All right. So make sure you have liked the Facebook page. Make sure you are following us on Instagram and on Twitter at Message1898. And of course, make sure you are subscribed to the YouTube channel. Carmela, I feel like I see your hand.
Yeah, I just have one little thing. We have one resource, Claudia, that is on messagemagazine.com in our store. It's called What It Takes to Heal, the transformation tips for abuse survivors. And so if, you know, you may circulate around in the community, you never know who needs something. But we have at least two titles, What It Takes to Heal and Reframe Your Pain. You can order those in the forms of tracks that you can leave a little, drop some hope and some strength to the people around you. Just wanted to chime in with that. Thanks, Claudia.
No, that's absolutely great. That's so important. Guys, make sure, and maybe even to what Carmela is saying, like Erica was telling us earlier, buy several of those tracks in that specific topic and put them in the bathrooms of your churches. Well, I guess y'all, we're all socially distanced right now, but consider getting the track and start leaving it on people's cars, in your apartment complex, in your neighborhood. Start passing them around, because the fact of the matter is even though we're all in quarantine, we're all locked up, there are people who now at least had some kind of an out at work, had some kind of an out at church to get away from their abusers, and that's not happening. And so we're now in a situation where abusers can't get to us. We've got to get to them. So go to our website, get that track, and start passing that out in your community so that people can start feeling safe to come out and get the help that they need. Guys, as always, it is always a pleasure to be here with you, to have these kinds of conversations, to challenge you, to inspire you. We pray that you have been encouraged and received some hope around this particular topic that we know is extremely difficult. And as we're all struggling and having various reactions to news like this, my encouragement to you is to please share this conversation, share the resources, share the information, and let's actually start making change both in our homes, in our churches, and everywhere that we have contact. All right. So we will see you guys next time. Of course, next week, same time, same place. It'll just be a different topic. So I will see you then. Have a great rest of your day.
Claudia, I think the one other thing that we have to remember, our behavior is definitely influenced and impacted by, like, what I was saying. And we know.
We're just excited that with the powers of Zoom and the like,
the eating of certain animals.
Headlines. I am your host, Claudia Allen. This is my chief at this time, right? So many churches are asking.
80% of the affiliates, ABC affiliates here in the United States.
Not telling the truth and going back to let's just dip.
Some of the issues. And so we live our lives working. If you think about
brother from another mother, the pastor, Richard Crawford. And I'm telling you, you know, we handle the heavy stuff. We do the heavy stuff.